In the case of nuclear or radiological fallout, people living around potential targets. You shouldn't leave your shelter until officials say so.
This is the emergency broadcast system. This is not a test. Repeat, this is not a test. Citizens are advised to take the following steps. Stay alert to news media events or local emergency alert notifications.
Well, welcome back, everybody, to the Big Red Button Podcast. If it's your first time here, welcome. We are a Fallout-themed role-playing game podcast slash audio drama. And we're well aware that a lot of you all are brand spanking new to the world of Fallout, whether with the new Amazon Prime show coming out. Very excited about that. Maybe you've just stumbled upon us, or you've found us through our other Grapefruit Network shows. If so, welcome. Welcome from the family. But we thought we should do a new series called Before the Button, where this is your one-stop shop of everything you need to know about Fallout and Big Red Button specifically, whether you're going to be watching the show for the first time or listening to our show. So, I'm joined tonight with Dallas and William and Cody, the rest of our team.
Hello!
Or I guess I should say, Game Master Dallas, Gottfried the Robot.
Hello!
Houston the Ghoul.
Is this loser still yapping?
And Jake, I guess I'm Jake the Vault Dweller, I suppose. We're recording this episode in addition to the regularly scheduled content. I promise we have another episode coming, but I wanted to make sure that we can answer all of your all's questions and understand the world. So we still have chapters 4, 5, and on coming, but I wanted to throw this in so that before we get so far down the road, people can hop in and understand where we are at. Guys, let's dive in. Any questions that I can answer?
Yes, all of the questions. That's honestly one of the reasons why I said, hey, can we create a backstory for my character where I have been locked away for hundreds of years and don't know what's going on.
Which, spoiler alert, we are thinking about doing a whole, like, side story of our backstories, but...
I know, and I can't wait. Okay,
that's not even breaking the fourth wall. That's breaking the fifth wall right there.
Yeah. So I have learned some.
Okay.
Going through this process.
Yeah. Let's do a deep dive
but
for you.
In general, what... I feel like there was a lot of confusion on the front end. What is Fallout?
Yeah.
Like, when did the bombs... I know bombs dropped.
Yes.
Obviously, from the name Fallout.
Yes.
Bombs dropped. Why do things look the way that they do? Are we in the future? Like, can you lay that out?
Yes.
Somehow?
Okay. So, we are talking about alternate history starting in the 60s. America and a lot of the world powers saw that... resources were limited. The U.S. in particular switched pretty much all of the home appliances to, like, nuclear power. It kind of took on this aesthetic of the 50s and 60s all the way into the 2070s. So then the world runs out of oil, and the only place we have oil is in Alaska.
Okay.
China and America go to war in Alaska. America even annexes Canada. So we just become one giant America. It's awesome. Which, I mean, Cody over here, the history buff, thinks that should have happened back in the War of 1812. I know. there's a giant war in Alaska. The government builds really big armor. But then in 2077, October 23rd of 2077, in this alternate history, the world destroys itself. In the lore, some people say it was the U.S. Some people say it was China. Some people say it was a corporation that had their hand in the cookie jar. Others even think it might have been aliens. I kid you not. So, that is the timeline we're working with. Does that help clear up where... Oh, and then, now where we exist as part of Big Red Button, I think we said was right at, what, 200 years-ish after everything's all settled down?
I think we were saying it was 2290. Yeah.
So we've had a ways back since the world went crazy, and then it kind of went Mad Maxian afterwards. Does that help a little bit on the timeline?
Yeah, it does. Having that kind of retro future look made it like, wait, are we in the 60s? Did the bombs drop in the 60s?
Yeah.
And that's why everything kind of arrested in the 60s.
Well, and that's the kind of like segues into like the idea of technology, because like the 50s and 60s were the peak and the pinnacle of like technology for the world in this. And so they just kind of kept that same vibe going. So like nuclear powered cars that kind of look like old Studebakers or like really big body, like what was the movie from George Lucas? American
graffiti.
American graffiti. Yeah. Where everybody cruises Maine or flow from Cars.
Right.
But
yeah.
Put a nuclear powered engine in her. Or like floating chrome robots that use little jet pulsers to, you know,
hey,
trim your
me.
Edges.
Yeah. Like the 50s Disney's version of the future. Like if that just came true, they're like,
like when they built Epcot, if that was the actual future.
Yeah.
okay.
Now,
gotcha.
Bombs drop and things obviously, like I said, kind of go Mad Maxian. Like, all right, we found a bunch of scrap in these bombed out cities. So you're talking like, all right, let's scrap together a pistol made out of like pipes and wood scrap and duct tape and... Or let's make armor out of football pads and hockey pads. And you walk into town and they're selling baseball bats as a weapon. That kind of way of life now. Like finding new purposes for old junk. Like you walk around and like, well, there's no power grid anymore. So a ceiling fan is pretty much only good for like screws and, you know, metal parts.
Right. Listen, I can appreciate that. I've been on a big thrifting kick here recently.
Okay, yeah, it'd be like if the Peddler's Mall became its own
Harry
country,
Potter.
And then
yeah, mostly Harry Potter. Yeah, that's fine.
So, what is civilization like in a post-apocalyptic world? Generally, there's still some semblance of society.
Yeah. Most everyone died.
Grabs collar, tugs twice. Yeah.
The Walking Dead still has like towns and stuff like that. So it's not unheard of.
Life finds a way.
Yeah.
So I guess you kind of got to go big picture first. Like who before the war was planning and scheming to survive a war versus who just survives by pure dumb luck, right?
Mm.
So first big group to think about is what happened to the U.S. government. In the grand scheme of things, did what most people think the government does, and they became this like shadowy cabal called the Enclave, and they're working on like human viruses to try and help people survive. But then when they see that their plans aren't working so hot, they go out and live on an oil rig, and then now that everything's gone, William's like, huh?
So. Everything's nuclear powered. Everyone kind of unanimously thought that the negative climax of this conflict was nuclear bombs are dropping. So everyone is actively trying to prep in some way. And the U.S. government is trying to make viruses for...
As the war was escalating before the bombs dropped, like people saw as things escalated and resources are running out, like we all need to make contingencies to survive. But also use that as like the carrot on the stick to do maybe some nefarious things as well.
Not that ever
Yeah.
No.
Which kind of leads in perfectly to a company called Vault Tech. And this is where, when we've talked about vaults, this is a company that's like, we're going to help you survive the future. You know, like, come on down. We're underground. And we've got all the resources and life is dandy down here. Now, of course, it's limited capacity. So it's very, you know, you're either coming in by a lottery system or paying lots and lots of money. And they talk about how, oh, you'll survive. And we even have Garden of Eden creation kits. So after everything settles down, you can go out and restore the world. But in reality, they were giant experiments on people. Like Black Mirror style. Gotcha. Like, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you're, as Jake Winger, your vault in particular, they experimented by, like, gaslighting you, like emotional, mental manipulation.
At least in the lore that we've created, right. Yes.
Okay.
I don't know. I don't know if anyone at Bethesda is listening in and they want to chat, but yes. So, but yeah, you'd have, like, in the games, you'd have a few that they were experimenting on plants, or they were working on cryo sleep, and they didn't tell the people going in. You had some that, one of my favorites, it was one guy and a box of puppets. Literally, he just gets in his own vault and he just talks to himself with puppets. And
Michael Caine! In the Muppets Christmas Carol.
Yeah.
That's basically the plot of that movie, right?
You had another one where it was like one guy and 100 women. There was one where it was like...
There's one where they like gave them all... Like they put drug addicts and gave them drugs, yes, and then just quit giving them drugs to see what would happen.
And so everybody cleans themselves up. But then 2 years into the experiment, now that everyone's gotten sober and clean, all of a sudden they drop a whole bunch of chems and alcohol back in the center of the vault and a riot ensues. They are cruel. They are cruel experiments. Now, I have heard some people say that the lore speculates that it was potentially experiments for space travel, because aliens do exist in the Fallout, like in the world.
Ooh. The Zaydens.
Okay, so it is confirmed.
Yes.
Yes. In fact, you can go visit a crash site every now and again if you get really, really lucky. It never happened for me after hundreds of hours. I'm not bitter.
Not bitter about it at all.
Question.
Yes. Answer.
Is there any spot of the world that's like unscathed?
That's a really good question, because we don't really know yet. They've only focused a lot on the U.S. So we've seen like the Northeast and Boston. We've seen D.C. We've seen the West Coast. In fact, we're going to see more, like we saw Las Vegas or New Vegas and the New California Republic out West. And we're going to see L.A. in the show. So, but we don't know really what the rest of the world's doing.
It would be extremely on brand if like this is just an American problem. Like the rest of the world is just fine. It's just fine.
And Canada and Mexico are looking at us like,
what is going on? Like,
right. we fix ourselves up, guys. Like, yeah,
they've talked about, because like when they created Fallout, it was, what in America in the 50s did people think the future would look like? And so that's what they went with. So they have talked about, like, if they did Great Britain, or, you know, a country in Africa, or Russia, they would go, like, they have talked to people there and have asked, in your culture in the 50s, what did you all think the future would look like?
Yeah.
And
it's retrofuturism, meaning what did, like, when you look back at like the Will Robinson, like, oh, so this is what the 60s think the 2000s are like. It's the same kind of thing here. Like, what did the 50s think that the 2070s would be? That's kind of where they went with it. So I don't know what the rest of the world really looks like. We could speculate.
Right.
But
okay. So the government, they make their little offshore thing. Uh-huh. They're just experimenting with these viruses. You have Vault Tech, people are going into the vault, protected from the blast. What about everybody else?
Yeah, that's great.
You didn't draw the lottery to get in this nice lead-lined bunker.
Right.
I would assume not everyone turned into, Houston, a ghoul?
A ghoul, yeah. So you're right. Not everyone turned, let's talk ghouls first, since you brought them up. So ghouls are people who are outside when the bombs dropped, far enough from the bombs that they weren't blown up, but close enough that radiation had its way with them, and they became these kind of zombified, leathery, immortal people. They've got really just leathery skin and no noses. They look like... It's a lot easier now to find a picture of them, and we'll link it. Yeah. And we'll link pictures in the bio. Don't worry. So they can live pretty much forever, or until some random lone wanderer decides that they want to gun you down, right? But then either from the radiation or from time, they slowly lose their minds and turn feral. And so that's more of your like traditional zombie, where they run at you, they want to eat you and attack you. You don't really turn into a ghoul from that.
Right.
I guess there is a game mechanic in 4 where you can get enough radiation that you zombify. Yeah?
Is there?
Okay, so really the radioactive decay, if you will, is in their mind, and they eventually snap and... Okay.
Yeah.
They're not like walking around and like, oh, lost a finger just because I'm undead and it's rotting and falling off. They're preserved in a less than desirable looking state.
Yeah.
But their mind... Okay.
They got thrown into like a really, really big Earth-sized dehydrator and turned into people jerky. Not to tie back to the episode, but it's more of they had that
initial radiation burn, and that's really the only damage.
Really locks in the seasoning, you know?
Pan-seared. And
that was that nice nuclear shellac all over the whole body.
I'm so tan. Look at me. I'm just brown as a biscuit.
Okay, what about everybody else? Like, I would assume... Hey, there's a certain radius that ghoulifies you. The center of the blast unalives you. But you are outside of the radius of anything.
Yeah. That's generally the Wastelanders. So those are people who...
Wastelanders, okay.
Okay, so they're probably people who either were so far out that they were safe. And generally you're talking about those are their descendants. They've got a homestead. They've just been, farming out there with what they can.
Country boy can survive.
You got it. Exactly. They know how to run a trot line.
Yeah, Eastern Kentucky didn't know that the bombs dropped. They've just been...
Which is amazing, because Fallout 76 is a game that shows what Appalachia, West Virginia looks like after, and it's beautiful. And you're like, This is eerily gorgeous now, you know? Or they're vault dwellers who have finally come out of their vaults and are now going back into the world. So those are fewer and farther between, but on the whole. Now, here's where things get a little spicy. The Enclave, the government, because they think that they are the rightful heirs to the world... They want to destroy everything that has existed since the bombs dropped. Make sense? They're like, no. This isn't the world we're inhabiting. None of you all deserve to be out here. So they're not real happy.
Ooh, yeah.
Yes.
They see things like ghouls as abominations.
Yes.
They're not.
Yes.
Not but something ironically, that they
caused. Ironically, they actually created a virus... Which gives us this strange... It's called the Human Evolutionary Virus. The Forced Human Evolutionary Virus. And the idea was, now we're going to help people survive. And what it actually does is it turns them into a giant ogre, in essence, called a super mutant. And they talk a lot like Kevin Malone from The Office, like, why use lot word when few do trick? And they're angry.
And even before the bombs dropped, they tried to use the Fev to create kind of super soldiers to fight during the war with China. But
yes.
It obviously did not work.
Well, now speaking of the war with China, this gives us basically our last big faction. And they are called the Brotherhood of Steel, who we actually have a few run-ins with in our show.
Yeah.
So they are a group that they're basically a cult. They're very, very xenophobic. They want to collect pre-war technology because they don't think anyone is deserving of it or responsible enough for it. And they collect weapons and technology and want to cleanse the wasteland. And so they're kind of on the same wavelength as the Enclave, from the sense of, yeah, we need to cleanse the wasteland so that wastelanders and the rest of us, whereas the Enclave is like, no, let's fresh start. Everybody clean.
And they started as a split of the Enclave because they were in the military, but they had seen kind of what the government was doing. And so they pulled themselves away and they're like, no, you guys are doing shady stuff. We're not going to help. But over time, being isolated, it became very religious in their beliefs. And they saw technology as the reason why the world ended. Like, you know, our reliance on atomic technology and all of this stuff, people can't have it. So therefore, we will not let people have it because it'll just happen again.
I think that's just a testament to the effectiveness of the world building and the storytelling, that I can 100% see that happening.
Right, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
A very similar thing happened in Battlestar Galactica. The world ended by like a robot apocalypse, and they came to Earth in like the prehistoric times and got rid of all of their technology. And the early humans of Earth started out as the transplants from Battlestar Galactica.
Sounds like great minds think alike.
Oh. Yeah.
or really xenophobic minds think alike, I guess, is really the... So, and then, I mean, in the same way that radiation made some people ghouls, it also messed a lot with the wildlife.
Oh, I didn't even think of that.
Yeah. So, I mean, one of the very first things that you'll meet in any of the games, because they're a little easier to beat, is like cockroaches that are the size of a loaf of bread or bigger.
Oh, yeah.
It's like the classic, I had to use that because that's the classic like 20 questions. Like, is it bigger than a loaf of bread? And it's like, yes, it is. Or like lizards and bears and lobsters.
Yeah.
Scorpions, a lot of stuff does funny things when they mutate. And dogs, I mean, there's not much in the wasteland that's nice.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, you've got basically like dragons coming at you. I don't know if somebody was a big fan of like, I don't know if Bethesda had like, I don't know, a game about dragons or something, but you know.
Wait, did they?
Yes, Skyrim.
Oh.
Or the Elder Scrolls, I should say. Yeah. Which actually were Deathclaws. Were Deathclaws a creation of Bethesda? Or were they around in 1 and 2? I don't remember.
I don't remember. But apparently, because I'm looking it up, the what do they call him? The guy that kind of invented the Fev used it on a pet chameleon. And that in lore is where Deathclaws came from.
Okay, so Deathclaws, I just looked, and now I'm going to get some flack from other people.
Me, who are obviously.
Even bigger. Oh, yeah.
From me.
You're such a big Fallout fan. Yeah, they have been around since the original. I thought so. But so, yeah, nature's not kind after the bombs. Not much is.
And people generally just create their own little microcosms of...
Yeah.
Different. Yeah. Like,
I did like that when you pointed out that the show is going to take place in California.
Yes.
I like that they are adding to the lore rather than taking like one of the storylines and just making a television adaptation.
And what's really good news is that they're working hand in hand with the team making Fallout 5. They've got a whole list of things that they're allowed to do and things that are off limits, but they are actually trying to make it an addition to the lore as opposed to, no, this isn't canon, you know, or, oh, we're going to take our own spin at this, you know. So I do appreciate that for sure.
And they're bringing in lots of, like, the new California Republic is in the new show, which is a faction in the games. So, like, the Brotherhood, all of those are...
Is there a status for Texas?
I don't.
Because in post-apocalyptic stuff I've seen, it's always, like, California and Texas become their own thing.
Right. California and Nevada are at odds a lot because of the factioning that goes on there. And because it's so far in the future, like, things have been lost and then refound. So, you know, like, Las Vegas, you have the Legion, which is all very Roman-based because of, like, certain casinos that are there.
Caesar.
Yeah, they have a Caesar. So they have picked up old things that were just in Las Vegas, and they're like, this is an old civilization, and that's what we are now. There's a group called the Kings, and they all follow what they think is an old world religion, but it's just Elvis and Elvis paraphernalia.
One of my favorite groups is called the Children of Adam, and they actually live at ground zero of one of these bombs and worship the radiation, worship, you know, and they're somehow surviving. I mean, if you try walking in there, you're getting Geiger counters off the charts, your armor is falling apart, your body is screaming for help, and they're just sitting around in shorts, praying to the atom.
Yep.
So.
Oh, A-T-O-M.
Oh, yes. It is not Children of Adam. Like, yeah.
Yeah, no.
So, I mean, there's tons of these little groups that you encounter.
Yeah.
And, you know, some people care more deeply about others just based on where they join the franchise. So some people are obsessed with one group and not the other. It's, you know, it also depends on who you like dressing up as most.
Pretty much,
because
yeah.
Do you want to wear really fun armor or do you want to wear a cool blue jumpsuit? Take your pick.
It sounds like this is a very... like a special sandbox to play in that has been created. Number one, to play in the game, but also just a world for us to play in for the Big Red Button.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah.
And they've intentionally in all of it been very like specifically vague. So that way you kind of get to play your own way. And there are rules, but there's a lot of like, who knows, you know, there are vaults and they're all numbered, but maybe there's more. Maybe there's one here. Nobody knows. So they leave a lot. So that way they're not locked down and paint themselves into corners, which is genius on their part for sure.
It's like why Batman, they never truly show how much wealth Batman has, because then it would be locked to time. And they keep these things kind of vague.
Batman is wealthy. And if you have to ask how wealthy, you're poor.
Yes.
You're not Batman wealthy. You're not Bruce Wayne wealthy. I mean, come on.
Wait, Bruce Wayne is Batman?
Spoiler. No, so it is. It's very fun as far as society goes, because if you can think of a way that somebody would have approached society after the war, whether it's, hey, let's all work together and band together and like, let's be a revival of the Minutemen. Like, that is our goal, is to care for our community. They did that.
Yep.
Hey, you know what? Let's steal, kill, and destroy, which leads us to the Raiders. There are some people that now they're out on their own. All they want to do is attack other people, take their goods, and have their way with anybody who's weaker. You know, might equals right in their mind.
So it's funny that you said a special sandbox, because... it is a beautiful world with a lot of lore, but it's still a game.
Okay.
And so they have to put some limits on how you make your character and progress through the world, and you get to be who you want to be. So if you would, if you want to be a smart guy, you can, or a strong guy, you can, but you're always going to be special. And they use the term special
as an acronym.
Yeah, to break down your skills in the game that then everything else builds off of. And special stands for strength, perception,
what?
Endurance, charisma, intelligence, cool. agility, and luck.
Which actually, does that make the game on our back end where you get to see your skill set, does that make a little more sense now?
Yes. Yeah. It makes perfect sense.
That's some Congress-level acronym.
Right.
Right.
Fallout at its core is a role-playing game. It is an RPG.
The more you talk about it, it's like it's just a visualized role-playing game.
And instead of, you know, in the same similar characteristics you would have in like a Dungeons and Dragons world, this is their way of incorporating this into a post-apocalyptic futuristic game of you still have to do strength checks, perception checks, and you have levels and limits on what your character can do. And all of these apply very specifically to how you want to play based on where you put your points. So you cannot be, you know, the end all be all in everything. If you want to be sneaky and pick locks and schmooze, then your charisma and, you know, your intelligence and agility, you know, like that all is going to play. But if you want to grab hammer and smash things, then your strength is going to be better. Or if you want to carry more things because you like to pick up every piece of garbage that you find.
And, guilty as charged. Yeah. I don't know if I'm going to need that, but I'm going to take it back to my settlement.
Yeah.
My seventh desk fan on me right now. 14th alarm clock.
Every Bethesda game, there is usually like some sort of item that characters are like, I'm going to find all of these and put it in a room.
But then what's funny is once I put it in my inventory and I go to make something else, it destroys everything that's in the inventory to scrap it and use it for spare parts.
Yeah.
So I don't even remember what's in there.
Right, yeah.
It's hoarding, but like in a way that doesn't actually fill up my real shelves. So,
exactly, yeah. You know. You can just hook it in a fake
room. But the thing is, you can't be God.
Yeah.
Like you can't just be all powerful in every area. So some people will go for a playthrough that's high intelligence. Some people do the inverse where they're super strong and incredibly dumb. And occasionally you get these really snarky replies from people when you say something extra stupid. And they're the NPCs, the non-playable characters in the game will be like, are you dumb, buddy? You know, like that level of like just talking down to you. Or you can be really, really lucky. And so when you get into battle, shots that have a 10% chance of hitting, hit every time. That sort of thing.
Yeah.
So
okay,
you have to pick and choose where you want to be really good in the game. Or you can be a jack of all trades and
yeah, just a little, a lot. But it shows up as limitations and you then have to become creative. You know, you may hit a spot in the game. Or like when we are playing, you know, you may want to try to sweet talk your way out of this, but you're dumb as rocks because that's how you made your character and that's locked out for you. You can't do that. So you're going to have to find another way.
I mean, for analogy, this is pretty much like how D&D plays it. Like paladins, rangers, all of that stuff.
Oh, yeah.
You know, they have different strengths and they have different weaknesses.
Yeah. This is a classless game. So like you don't pick you pick your stats, but you don't claim a role per se. You can
a type.
Yeah.
So like even in our game where we have Houston or Gottfried, that doesn't happen in the main game, which is kind of what makes our podcast a little more special. Pun intended.
I see what you did there.
Normally
I understood that reference.
The reference I made accidentally that now I understand or made intentionally. They didn't pick up on it. Then we had to go back to it. Yeah. Self-referential. Love it. Meta.
Hang on. I got to finish patting myself on the back.
Oh, beautiful.
Yeah,
so like in the game,
okay,
because it's a story, you're pretty much always human. You know, like I say pretty much always, you're always human.
Yeah.
Sometimes you have Liam Neeson as your dad. Other times you are a dad and your son gets stolen. Other times you're a courier who runs into the mafia. Like, but what's unique about our game is that we have a few different, you know, types of characters. Yeah. So
we missed a chunk of the robots. Do you want to talk about Fallout and their mechanical brethren?
I didn't even have that on here. So let's do it.
We have a whole Mr. Handy, so
it would be wrong not to cover robots.
That's me.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's me.
So hearkening back to that like 50s futuristic.
No. Harkonnens are in Dune.
Get out.
Wrong franchise.
You're not selling the movie to me.
There is a Modiphius Dune.
I'm just going to see myself out.
I think my character's a little bit more closer to life than I previously thought.
I mean, it was hilarious when you both picked up your voices. I was like, Cody doing the smoker voice is what the ghouls sound like. Or, I mean, yes, looking behind the curtain, you've met the wizard for a second. I do add a robot effect on William for Gottfried.
He doesn't sound telling people that. I want people to think that I can just do that by contracting my
But I mean, when you both like your characters, you just were like most of the ghouls are like, yeah, I'm done with life. Like whatever. Like you know, they're tired of being pushed around. Or neurotic robots who are trying their darndest. Yeah, it's the raised hand points at face. Raised hands points at face. Yeah, you. Yes, you. I was like, wow, you guys didn't even know what you were doing, and you're doing it perfectly. Keep doing it.
My luck is through the roof in this game.
Well, yeah, you have a 5 so far.
Exactly,
so we'll get there. So, all right. So, robots in the world, Dallas. You were starting there.
So, robots, just like in like 50s, look at the future, like Jetsons. There's robots that'll help you do every little task in your life that came true. So, there's all kinds of robot assistants everywhere. Everything from
Assaultrons.
Yeah. So the military obviously is going to lean into their side of things. So big, clunky, just, you know, tank robots with giant guns to even, you know, more human-esque versions of that as well. To our own Mr. Handy type robots that are those where you're like every day in the house to help you with whatever. And they had nanny variants that helped you with your kids and nurse variants that helped you when you're sick, or Mr. Gutsies, which are the army version of the same thing, and all kinds of.
So it wouldn't be too far of a stretch for there to be one that worked in a bank.
Yeah, oh, absolutely not, because they were just everywhere. Yeah.
Yay.
It was like, you know, you'll see in like houses in Fallout, like there's a cardboard box that they pulled their Mr. Handy out of. Like it's a washing machine.
Yep. You went to pre-war Kmart, bought your blue light special, and bada bing, bada boom.
Yeah.
You've got your own personal assistant. Yeah. Exactly.
But just like with everything in Fallout, there are nefarious actors in the background wanting to do shady things. So there are some that are called robo brains, where they were actively removing human brains to use as like CPUs. It did not make them human. They just wanted to use it as just a better computer chip. But there's a floating brain on the top of these robots. And then there's another shadowy group called the Institute. Who was another one of those like best intentions, trying to kind of manipulate the world into what the pre-war world was, and making synthetic humans and synthetic animals and everything. But things go sideways, and
it's basically Blade Runner at that point. We've talked Mad Max. Now we're talking Blade Runner, where it's like you can't tell the difference, and the idea is, you know, we could make the world better if there were more synths, because they're going to think like humans. They're going to be able, they won't know that they're a robot unless you tell them. And what if you could just replace people in their brains, you know, just to be a synth?
And there's like a very like 50s McCarthyism going on, because people are like, they're sneaking in and killing people and replacing them with synths. So it's a
Red Scare style. Like, yeah.
You're a synth. Okay. Everybody get them. And you don't know unless you can look inside of a person whether or not they are.
This is their witch trials.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And they will kill, like, I mean, turning on family members and
public trials of just popular opinion.
Yeah.
Not even. Yeah, and so there's a little bit of that.
I mean, this is quite literally, like, literally something like that happened in Battlestar Galactica, where, you know, it was like every week is like, who's a Cylon? Who's a secret robot? You know, they were dressing, masquerading themselves up as humans.
Yeah.
I haven't thought about Battlestar Galactica in like 7 years, so, and I've brought it up twice today. Don't know what's going on.
So we've mentioned Battlestar Galactica. We've mentioned radioactive bears. Do beets get brought up at all?
We mentioned Kevin Malone talking. The world of Fallout exists in the same universe as The Office and Parks and Rec. I believe fully that there's a Ron Swanson out there that.
Oh, you there's know a
giant,
there is.
There's a giant super mutant named Swan. It's Ron Swanson.
Or maybe it's Ron's swan son.
Don't tempt me.
What's Michael Scott's movie called in The Office?
Threat Level Midnight.
Threat Level Midnight.
And they.
Detective Michael Scarn.
And they reached Threat Level Midnight. The clock struck midnight. And the bombs dropped. Oh, it's all coming together, guys.
The Office is a Fallout show.
Taking notes on my old-timy Fallout computer over here.
So, I mean, the world is a messed up place in the real world. The world is a messed up place in the fake world. But what is really fun is there's, like, still tons of good people that you can encounter. It's not all just, like, dour and depressing. Yes, obviously... You're talking about the end of the world, but now it's like, all right, when Dallas called it a dandelion popping up in the cracks of the parking lot, very much what's going on. So,
So we have popped up our own dandelion in this parking lot of a franchise of a game and now a show that has its own rules and its own way of doing things. So do you guys want to get into... our own way that the world works?
Nah, I understand it completely, so...
No, this is where it's fun for me, because, like, oh, I really enjoy Fallout, but now I get to be like, hey, how does the game that... the tabletop game work, which is cool to me. So, Dallas, first, talk to us about the company that helped put this together, how you found it, you know, how it was built.
Yeah. So, we were looking at... We did a Choose Your Own Adventure series, and we had looked into maybe other games and just flipping through, like, what would work, what wouldn't work, what's interesting, what's not. And I had stumbled upon this company called Modiphius, and we had kind of said, we don't want to do classic Dungeons & Dragons, but I'd stumbled into this company that uses a different rule set and has all these other worlds that are familiar, but they're their own tabletop, do whatever you want to kind of game. And I saw Fallout. I'm a big gamer nerd. I knew that world and popped it up to you guys.
He knew he had one other ally over here.
I knew that it was unfamiliar enough that made like we could dive in if we wanted to. You guys said sure, and I went full neurotic. Obsessive compulsive over it and flipped through everything and built the
here
world.
At the Grapefruit Network, we do nothing less than 127% right. on the, every project
and always every project. Projects that are in the wrong direction
but our Rotten Tomato score is a solid 2%.
Yeah, what's really weird is initially we thought about calling this Fallout role-playing game OnlyFans, where we go and collect OnlyFans in the wasteland. And then we realized that that had a terrible implication. We were like, we can't do that.
We would probably get lots of search traffic.
But yes, not the target demographic.
Yeah. It was the wrong demographic. Yeah. So Modiphius has its own rule set for most of its games, and they call it 2D20. So if you're familiar with role-playing games and tabletop games or Dungeons and Dragons...
I'm nodding like I am, but in reality, I am the least... I can't believe it. I'm the least nerd of this group.
This is funny. Della said, if you're familiar, Alex was nodding. I was shaking my head. But I was shaking my head because I am familiar. And the first time I rolled a 20, I was like, yes! And they laughed at me because...
it's opposite land.
Two 20-sided dice that were rolling and... Big number bad, small number
yeah.
good.
Yeah. And for me, like, I have dabbled in the dragons and dungeons, but not enough to really get how the taxes work on the back end and the math. So for me, this is more intuitive.
You have to pay taxes?
All Dungeons and Dragons is just you doing taxes, and there are dragons in the room. You're rolling dice, and there's numbers and percentages.
Do they have a TurboTax, like, free edition for that, or...?
Yes.
I'm pretty sure I had a nightmare about a dragon the day before I did my taxes. So, you know, it's all...
Oh, you had a Dungeons & Dragons dream. but the way that this system works is you take your skill, and you take your... whatever else you're using, and you add those two numbers together, and you have to roll your dice and get that number or lower. So if you have an agility score of 5 and a, you know, unarmed skill of 3, that's 8. You need to get an 8 or below, not adding and subtracting to get what you need. So you use a 20-sided die, and you have to get an 8 or below. 1 is great. That's perfect. That is your natural 20 in the Dungeons & Dragons world. And a 20 is called a complication, where instead of, like, you just massively failing and getting hurt, it makes things just a lot more complicated. So, like, the trigger falls out of your gun, or, you know, you tried to schmooze a mayor of a town and accidentally called them a...
mommy
inappropriate name or whatever it is that you did. It just makes the story more interesting.
Some stories just right, for the record. So we've got our specials for each of our characters, and we have skills for each of our characters, and then we also have more like traits and perks for each of our characters. So depending on the task at hand, we look at the specific attribute in the special. Then we look to see if we have an associated skill. And then we look to see if we have a trait or a perk that can help even more. Okay.
And that applies to everything from combat to speech or looking for things. It's just...
So it's a lot like our Choose Your Own Adventure, where we'd have a few extra perks sitting there and in cards. And it's like, oh, you're good at... you know, searching and opening drawers and, you know, so many drawers to open in Choose Your Own Adventure, apparently.
And it's more binoculars. Complicated to open that drawer than you would think.
Yeah. So can we also break down by character what we're good at? That way our listeners, when they're listening to these encounters, hey, what is Gutfree going to be able to do for this encounter? And that way, when we forget, the listeners can now chide us in the comments.
Absolutely. Do you want to speak to each of your own characters' strengths and weaknesses?
I mean, sure. Yeah, I'll walk through how I built Jake. And then, obviously, we're going to explore some of our own backstories going forward. So I'm not going to spoil that. But when I built out Jake, my thought was, I am a average guy who is living in a vault, and so I'm probably not the world's strongest person. I'm probably not, you know, the world's most agile or the world's most perceptive, because everything's kind of handed to me on a silver platter in some way, right? But just by being born in a vault, I automatically got a trait called Vault Kid.
Yeah, because you were in a vault, you grew up in a vault, you're healthier than people who had to just eke out a living in the wasteland. So you can reduce the difficulty of endurance-related tests and resisting disease because you have a better immune system. So you get more privilege because you were in the vault when it comes to your health.
Nice.
Yeah.
So, and then when I built out the rest, I thought, all right, so strength's probably a little lower just because you live a kind of cushy life, you know? It's not like your first priority to be, oh, I gotta lift crazy weight to keep my farm and fight off raiders, because that's just not what you do. But I thought, you know, endurance, you're going up and down a lot of stairs in a vault. Charisma, you have to have, you know, good people skills to live in close proximity. And I'm probably going to have better education, so I went with a higher intelligence. So all of these work on a scale of 1 to 10. And so the highest that I have anything in right now, I'm a 7 in endurance, charisma and intelligence, 5s in agility and luck, and perception, and 4 in strength. So, lower end there. Because again, we need lower numbers to be more successful. Therefore, having higher numbers in these attributes makes it easier to achieve lower numbers.
Right.
So, and then a few of the skills, I'm strong in bartering and medicine and lockpicking. Just because I felt like that would be something that a vault kid would, you know, want to, you know, get himself into a little bit of trouble. I that was one that I just picked that I thought that could be interesting. And then I have a perk called the Smooth Talker. The backstory that we created is that this vault was experimenting on people by gaslighting them. So I thought, well, in that kind of environment, you can't help but come out a little more, you know, a little smoother around, you know, talking to people. So I thought that seemed like an appropriate fit there. So that's kind of the build for Jake.
Gotcha.
So I, for my special, I have a 5 in strength, 2 in perception, 5 in endurance, 10 in charisma. Although, at the rate that the character is going, I'm not entirely sure if that was the right choice on that one. It's kind of developed as the cynic in the corner. and that's fine. It's growing.
He's not winning hearts and minds until, you know, he actually has to. And that's fair. You know,
yes. Like, yes.
I appreciate it.
6 in intelligence, 2 in agility. I just fall over my own feet.
You're irradiated to all get out. Those joints have zero cartilage left, you know?
Or it's
bone on bone, baby.
That might be a real world influence there, as far as my agility is concerned.
Houston also has a 700-pound head, I believe is the way you phrased it in our sister show.
And a 10 in luck. Because if there is one area in my life that I wish there was luck, maybe I was that lucky, it would be in a fictional universe in which I'm that lucky, I guess.
You don't survive for 200 years without having a little luck on your side.
Yeah, I love it.
On the skills, I'm a 1 in athletics, which tracks, which... 3 in barter. I got 5 in the big guns, which I haven't really used yet much. 1 on energy weapons, 2 in explosives, 3 in science, and pretty much nothing else on that end. But yeah, the idea was that really to just to think that the best if I'm loaded with weapons, I'm good. But anywhere else, I was a writer in a former life. As far as my character was concerned,
Hemingway knew how to handle a gun.
Oh yeah.
Especially at the end.
Initially in the conception... Oh my. in the conception of the character was... I thought the bombs had dropped in 1960. And that's why the world kept a 1960s aesthetic.
Oh, so you thought you were like 300 years old.
I was thinking, yeah, that I like the bombs dropped in 1960. So I had this whole grand plan that my character.
I was confused about that, too.
Yeah, that I had this whole grand plan that my character was going to be Steven Spielberg, but never went to law school, not law school, film school. That Steven Spielberg never went to film school. And so he just has all of these great ideas for stories that he never got to make. And I would just drop hints throughout of Steven Spielberg.
But I like how Houston's become his own guy who's like,
yeah,
got that writer's block and he had some good books. And now he's just been sitting on this last idea that he can't figure it out. And I love it. I love where it's going.
Sitting on writer's block for 250 years.
Of course. Don't tell us exactly his backstory, because that's where, you know, before the button is going to be going. So,
or since I'm a writer and I tell stories, maybe we don't even know what my backstory is, or we leave it up in the air whether or not it's true.
it's like the Joker in The Dark Knight.
Do you want to know? I got like, these scars.
Yeah, it's come up with a news story about your back. Yeah.
Every time. You know, every time.
Oh my goodness.
All right, so that's Jake. That's Houston. Now, our neurotic robot friend who we love dearly, Godfrey.
I need to clarify on a couple of things. The last game console that I had was a PS1.
Yes.
And I was 14. I have not owned a game. We have a Nintendo Switch. I don't know if some people count that, some people don't. I have not had a game console since then. So I knew nothing about Fallout. They really roped me into this by saying, you know, you can play a robot with a British accent. So I'm a neurotic British robot. And in the game, I also get to play a neurotic British robot.
Isn't obsessed with Harry Potter. I don't understand where we dropped the ball there.
Spoilers. Anyway, so I had also requested, because the way that Harry Potter worked so well is Harry knew nothing of this world. He was exposition. Is there a way where I can be oblivious to the state of the world, and you can use me as exposition? And so we came up with this whole backstory.
Yes, there is a way.
For Godfrey. As far as my skills go, I do have three arms, but they are not the strongest arms in the world. So my strength is a 4, but I am equipped with an array of sensors, so I put my perception as a 7. Endurance is 5. Charisma is 5. Intelligence, sometimes he's too smart for his own good, is a 7. Agility is a 7, and luck is a 5. So not really any huge spikes on any characteristics, but given that I have a vast array of sensors and I have 3 arms, my perception and agility
spelled
are pretty high.
It's pronounced in the
traditional King's English of GOTFI. Godfrey, gosh.
I'm laughing about it now. We're not even in it.
I know. As far as my skills, two in athletics, 1 in energy weapons, a 6 in lockpicking, 2 in medicine, because I had to
do really
exactly
good.
You know, just as an homage to real life, I did give it 2 in medicine, 6 in repair, 3 in science, 5 in sneak, and 2 in survival. Oh, 1 in speech. one in speech. And my perks is a cap collector, which I thought could come in handy since that's the currency. He has no idea. He just shiny. I'm shiny. Let me collect it. But everybody's like, oh, you collect caps. Hey, come on our party here, buddy, because you can, whether or not that
comes in handy, money.
You find some more money.
But he also worked in a bank. So it's like, he went to like collect money unwittingly. You know, the other thing is we exist in a world that has not been touched yet by the existing Bethesda or Interplay Studios, any of the worlds that they've built. Like, they've primarily been on the East Coast, far East Coast, or on the far West Coast, with hints to the Deep South. But when Dallas and I were talking, he said, where should we set it? I said, wouldn't it be hilarious to have like Midwest, where it'd be like a whole bunch of like, oh, don't you know, like just super polite raiders and nice people. And like when I joke, like he was like, I've got an idea and I'm going to run with it. He did. Like I was like, Michigan would be hilarious. And a week later, he sends me a screenshot of Fallout Michigan with town names and everything. So what we are going to do is we're going to take a bunch of those screenshots and link them on the website so that you all can see what our characters look like. You get an idea of what the world we're living in is. Because I know not all of us are some of us are geographically challenged. If I didn't have a map half the time, I'd be lost. So if it weren't for Google Maps, good luck getting me across town. So we're going to link all those. That way you can click through and have an idea of what Dustridge looks like, or Harrison, or all of Michigan. No, I think that's a little bit of like the game itself. So any outstanding questions, gentlemen?
No, I don't think so. And I think it's given me a firm understanding of the world, but I don't want to dig too deep into other things because I want there to still be surprises.
Wonder and surprise. And
yeah.
And now I hope that everyone feels comfortable either going into the show, if that's where you're headed next as a listener or a viewer, or if you're coming from the show and just finding us through the Fallout community, welcome. Hopefully you have a better idea of what the heck these four goobers are doing when we sit down to play a game.
Your Kentucky is showing.
Careful, your Kentucky's showing.
I'm looking forward to the fallout of this conversation.
Gentlemen, I think now would be a good time for us to press the big red button. And we will see you all next episode. If this is your first time here, again, thank you for stopping by. If it is not your first time, hopefully that this has given you some insight either into the world of Fallout or into how this game has been built and our characters, and hopefully that's given you some insight. If you have enjoyed what you've heard here, we hope that you subscribe, like the show, give us 5 stars, and if you want to learn more about our show specifically, check out bigredbutton.show. And if you want to find other shows like ours that are in our sister network, go to thegrapefruitnetwork.com to find out more about other Grapefruit Network productions. So thank you all again for coming along. This has been the Big Red Button Podcast.